Okay, welcome back, everyone. At the end of last lecture, I realized I had forgotten to record the previous lecture. So on the website, I posted a recording of roughly the same lecture from 2018. Hope that's not too much of a problem. Going forward, if anybody notices in the Zoom that I'm lecturing and I'm not recording during the main content, please shout out, let me know. I give 5 points extra credit for anybody who catches me on that and prevents me from losing a recording. I'd appreciate it, but try to make sure that doesn't happen again regardless. Okay, so we'll dive in. Last time we were talking about analysis of these nonlinear capacitances and really finished up the extent that we're going to talk about it in the course. We're going to develop this tool so that as we go in and start dealing with analysis of power converter circuits, when we have to consider the effects of this COSS CDS capacitance, because it is nonlinear, we need some sort of tool to make that tractable. So the way we approached it was to first just look at the analysis of a nonlinear capacitor and understanding what that nonlinear capacitor meant and what the datasheet reported capacitance meant in terms of kind of how this capacitor behaves. We can go through and derive different characteristics of the capacitor, such as the charge or energy or anything else we wanted to do. It's not super pleasant in that we now have this C of VC term, which we cannot pull out of the integral because the capacitance isn't constant. So if we want charge or energy or any other characteristic, we end up just having to integrate this empirical curve of capacitance or curve fit it to get an analytical solution, but that has limited applicability. To make things at least a little bit more pleasant, what I proposed we use are these linear equivalent capacitors. These are is just taking the nonlinear characteristic and mapping it into a different valued linear capacitor that would match the nonlinear capacitor on a single characteristic. So we really focused on this charge and energy equivalent. They're linear capacitors that would have the same charge at a given voltage or energy at a given voltage. Reminder, these linear equivalents are equivalent only on the single characteristic which they are based on. So the charge equivalent will have the same charge at VDC, but everything else about this charge equivalent linear capacitor will be different from the full nonlinear characteristic. It'll have different energy. It'll have different charge at any other voltage. In the time domain, the curve will look different. Everything else is different, but it will have this one matched characteristic. Same thing with the energy equivalent, but with the energy of VDC. Okay. Depending on the integrity of our modeling, we may need to take into account the full nonlinear characteristic if we want something super accurate, or use multiple linear equivalents in different equations to be able to really solve converter operation. Like I said, if we're okay with having a little bit of error, often the charge equivalent capacitor is a good choice because it's kind of in the middle of all of these different equivalents. But using it in any other context than calculating a charge will result in some error. But so we went through and we calculated if we have a half bridge that's hard switching, what is the loss on it? Found that depends on not only the energy stored in the capacitor, but also this charge equivalent capacitance. And if the devices are matched, it in fact only depends on the charge equivalent, which was an interesting result. And then as promised at the end of last lecture, where we're going to move from here is into a new analysis technique that's called state plane analysis that makes it little easier to manage solving operation of converters with significant resonance in them. So this is a slide from lecture 2 or 3 in the introduction where we talked about, okay, with this DCM-like operation of the boost converter where it's soft switching, we end up getting these significant intervals. This is really the dead time of the switching of this boost converter, where our circuit is in some kind of a resonant state. And as we go to higher frequency, and as we change around passive values, these intervals become significant. And we're not really going to get a good picture of the converter operation if we neglect them, as we would do in a traditional 481 type analysis, and just treat this whole waveform as a square wave treat this inductor current as a triangular wave. These resonant sections begin to significantly affect the operation of the converter. See, they are real. It's not just analytical. In a real set of experimental waveforms, these resonances take up a significant portion of the period, which then adjusts what the average current needs to be to get the power through and adjust the operation, conduction losses, and everything else. So we need a technique to be able to deal with these things and still solve and design the converter. And averaging is not going to get us there. If we just apply traditional averaging assumptions, first thing we'll do is make a small ripple analysis. And as soon as we get rid of ripple, all of these things are gone. That works well when the ripple is small, but when we start doing large ripple converters, they're intentionally designed with large ripple, small ripple approximation is going to get us in trouble. Averaging is not going to work on things that have purely AC waveforms through them. So it'll just tell us the average is zero and it'll act like the converter doesn't have any power for the components delivered at higher frequency harmonics. So what we need is some way to make it a little bit easier to go through and solve the operation of this converter in designs where these resonances are significant to the operation. And I said early on in class, I mean, you have all the tools you need to do this. We could go through and solve the differential equations in every single interval and then match them up where we have some equivalent circuit during the dead time, some equivalent circuit during the other switching intervals. Here, you know, this would be like our DTS, our D prime TS interval, and our two dead times. You could write out the differential equations for those circuits and match up the initial conditions at the end, at the beginning of each period with the final conditions from the previous period and go through and solve that as a big mess of algebra. And essentially that's the way to do it. What state plane analysis is going to be is a way to make that a little bit faster, or we can find commonalities in that analysis and kind of jump past them so that we don't have to be resolving differential equations every time we run into a resonance. So let's first just kind of look at what sort of circuits we might want to focus on and then develop techniques for those. So here I'm just showing a synchronous buck converter and a buck boost converter. I'll assume, didn't draw them in here, but this buck boost also has CDS type capacitances on all the devices. And kind of know how to deal with the circuit here and here. When I've got some of these MOSFETs on, I know how to deal with something that just looks like a voltage applied across my inductor. Again, C out, small ripple generally applies on this output capacitor. We're okay with averaging that and treating it as a constant voltage because we're designing this thing as a DC to DC converter, so the output voltage should be relatively constant. We should force ourselves to design C out such that it achieves small ripple. We're okay with assuming that on the front end for most DC to DC converters' output capacitance. So really the place that we need a new tool for these types of converters is during this time, during the switching dead times when I have both MOSFETs off and these CDS capacitances are introduced into my circuit, creating some sort of resonance. So I'm gonna make a couple of assumptions. The first I've already stated, and assume C out is sufficiently large. In this case, I'll say it's much bigger than CDS. Okay, so the output capacitance is way bigger than these parasitic capacitances of my FET. And it's big enough that we can apply small ripple assumptions on it. Okay. And then I'm also going to assume CDS is linear for this analysis. We know is not true, but now we have a technique with calculating an equivalent linear capacitance to be able to replace the nonlinear capacitance with some linear one for our analysis. So if it is not sufficiently linear in and of itself, then we can replace with a linear equivalent and then analyze the circuit with that linear equivalent. Okay. So what does this circuit look like during the dead time? So I'll take this top one, the buck converter, during the dead time when I've got both switches off on my source. And then because both switches are off, what I'll be left with is just their capacitances. CDS of both devices, and then the output filter here. And this buck boost converter, I turn all four switches off potentially at the same time. What we're left with is an equivalent circuit that looks like VG, pair of CDSs here, inductor, another pair of CDSs, and then my output filter. Four of these CDSs, we'll label them all. Okay, in both cases, we'll assume even if significant operation, these dead times are some smaller fraction of the overall period, small enough that our small ripple approximations on things like the output capacitor will hold. And what we're really concerned with is kind of this resonance part, the AC component of these circuits. So we can do some DC simplification here to get an AC equivalent to each of these circuits. The idea would be, like we mentioned before, from the switch node capacitance, either of this high side or low side CDS, go to nodes that are effectively DC. So for any AC component, I can place them effectively in parallel. So I can choose how I want to do that. Let's just for the moment say I put them in parallel right here. And because I'm allowing myself to make small ripple approximation on this output capacitor, I can replace it with just a voltage source during this interval. Okay, this this should be two CDS from the two capacitors in parallel. So with the simplification I've made, keep in mind that as I simplify, it destroys some waveforms that were originally in the converter. So because I've placed this high side CDS in parallel with the low side CDS, the voltage across this will still be V switch. But the current going through it is IL. So the current in this capacitor is neither the current in this capacitor nor the current in this capacitor. It's the sum of the two. So if I analyze this circuit during the resonant interval and I want to know what the current was in this capacitance, I'm going to have to back out and go find that after the fact. If I want to know what V switch is, I've still got that in the circuit. There are multiple options for what I can do. I could have instead put the capacitances in parallel with the high side, put them both in parallel with this device, and kept VG in the circuit. Then it would have been in series with V, and it would create one equivalent source, VG minus V volts. That way I would keep this voltage in the circuit rather than V switch. It's up to you. What waveforms you keep in the circuit, as long as you're keeping track of what these manipulations are and eventually how they correspond to the waveforms in the real circuit, your choice as to how you want to derive this AC equivalent. Okay. I can do the same thing down here with this buck boost. And if I apply small ripple on the output and say I can replace this C out in parallel with R with just some voltage source, then in both of these half bridge legs, I can say that they are between an AC node and two DC nodes, so I can put them all in parallel. Let's just do this one the opposite way. So I'll put my effective capacitances in parallel with the high side. So that what I'm left with is something that looks like this. L. two CDS. Let me figure out why it's doing that. And then since everything's in series, I can do a little bit more manipulation to simplify, get an AC equivalent circuit where the source looks like here, EG minus V. I can rotate things around since they're all in series. Take my two CDSs in series, just gives me CDS, and then my inductor here. Again, so now this voltage on this capacitor is really nothing from the original circuit. The current in this loop is still IL, since I've kept my inductor in there. But the voltage across this capacitor is none of the four voltages across the original capacitors. It's some combination of them in parallel and series. If I want to get back to the individual voltages, I have to step back through the circuit. I could have instead put the capacitances in parallel with the low side devices, in which case I'd have gotten rid of this DC voltage source and just have a LC series circuit, series connected with nothing else. All of these are fine. They're all different AC equivalents as long as you're keeping track of what the waveforms are in your AC equivalent. Have I kept any voltages or are they abstract mathematically equivalent voltages? Does that all make sense? Any questions? Anywhere? So the point I want to make here is in many of the circuits that we're going to be interested in analyzing, these resonance behaviors really come down to a single LC circuit that I can analyze to get the AC effect. Here I had a buck converter and a buck boost, a different number of devices, different structure of the topology, but in both of them it reduced down to some source, one inductor, one capacitor that I need to analyze to figure out what the waveforms do during this interval. Okay. That'll be true in a lot of cases. There's some where this won't hold, where there is really a significant resonance higher than second order, have multiple different frequencies of resonance going on at the same time. Those are a little bit less common. Even if I had more elements, generally, if I have multiple inductors, one of them is smallest and has the highest frequency resonances, and the other ones can be treated as large filter elements with respect to the time of the resonance of that smallest inductor, so on. We'll talk a little bit about multi-resonant case, but those are a little bit more esoteric. You won't see them as often. So because things reduce to a pretty similar circuit here, we're going to develop tools for analyzing this type of circuit, which is really just a simple second order LC circuit. Okay. So I'm putting the general form of it here. In addition to some voltage source, we may also have some current source. This often comes if I have another inductor in the circuit, but it's very large so that during the dead time, its current stays approximately constant. We can apply a small ripple to it. VDC comes from our sources and possibly a small ripple assumption on the output capacitor. But what I'm left with is this type of circuit that I need to analyze for the behavior during this resonant interval. Which, you know, we know how to do. We've known that since circuits one. If I want to analyze this circuit, I'm going to write the two differential equations from my two reactive elements. So for my capacitor, I'll write I is equal to CdV dt. So my capacitance dVc dt is equal to the current that goes into the capacitance, which is IL minus IDC. And then L DIL DT is equal to the voltage across the inductor, VDC minus VC. So we get a pair of differential equations that are linked to one another. So we can combine these together and say L D by DT, taking equation two, and then I'm gonna rearrange equation one, solve for IL and plug that in. So IL is C, dVc dt plus IDC back to equation 2 is equal to VDC minus VC. Okay, simplifying a little bit, since we're taking the derivative of everything in the parentheses, derivative of a constant is going to go to 0. So I'll end up with L d squared VC dt squared, LC, excuse me. And then I'll pull everything over to the left side, plus VC minus VDC is equal to 0. And then my job is to use DiffyQs to solve this and solve this equation for some VC as long as I have initial conditions. I can plug in and find my coefficients. Say my initial conditions are VC at time t is equal to 0 is V naught. IL at t is equal to 0 is I naught. And plug all that stuff in, I get a solution for VC. Then I can go back and plug that solution for VC in here and solve for IL. Or probably easier to plug it in here, just differentiate it and solve. And that, going through that mess, how would I approach it? Okay, it's a second order differential equation. So you kind of plug in sines and cosines with arbitrary coefficients. Take the second derivative of it, plug everything in and solve for the coefficients and plug in the initial conditions to solve for those constants. And we get something that looks like this out of this, without having to go through that whole process. We solve for V sub C and I sub L, end up with some constant term and then a pair of sinusoids, cosine and sine on each. So what can we learn from this? This is the generic solution to this type of circuit. So I'm rewriting it on this slide and I simplified a little bit, some notation. I'm gonna define omega naught is equal to 1 over root LC is equal to 2 pi F naught is our resonant frequency. And then R naught, our characteristic impedance, is root L over C. Okay, I plug those two things in, simplify kind of what's in the argument to the sinusoids and these coefficients here. So that, equations are still a bit unwieldy to carry around with us. So the core of state plane analysis is gonna come from a normalization that we apply to this solution that I'm gonna first present and then kind of talk about why afterwards, okay? So our normalization is the following. We are gonna normalize voltages, V sub C of T, by dividing by some base voltage. This is a constant. It's just a normalization factor that we use to scale all of the voltages that we're considering in the circuit, okay? And my notation here, I'm gonna call normalized voltages M. So M sub C of T is just our normalized capacitor voltage. It's divided by V base. In this analysis scheme, state plane analysis that we're talking about, V base is any constant voltage you like. Anything will work. Some choices are better than others. And we'll see that as we go forward. You can pick 27 volts as your base voltage and everything will work. It often makes your life a little bit easier and some of the algebra a little bit easier if you choose something like VDC, something like V naught, so you can cancel out a few terms. But everything will work regardless of what you pick for V base. Just scaling V sub C. The important part is normalizing the current has to correspond. So we'll call our normalized currents J, symbol just for a normalized current. And that'll look like IL of T divided by I base. Again, just normalizing it by some constant value, but I base is constrained. I base is equal to V base, whatever you selected, over R naught. Okay. So all we've done here is kind of change the amplitudes of our two signals. We change the notation because these things are now unitless. If I take my voltage and divide it by 5 volts, the units cancel. My M is some unitless normalized parameter that corresponds to a voltage. The other thing we're going to do is we're going to note, this isn't really part of the normalization, this is just true, that omega naught times T, we're going to start calling those angles. We'll generally call them theta, but we may use different Greek letters every now and then to refer to different angles. We can do kind of just time T or any specific time. If we wanted to normalize the dead time, T dt, multiply by omega naught to say, okay, what angle is that with respect to the resonant frequency of the circuit, theta dt. So I'm going to go ahead and carry this through and apply this normalization to our two equations here and see what we get for M sub C and J sub L. Do some simplification there and note some characteristics of it that'll hopefully loop back and show why this normalization is useful and why it's constructed the way it is. Okay. For now, just trust me, doing this is going to be helpful. Okay. So our two equations again, and we're going to normalize. I'm going to select V base is equal to VDC. Just as I go through and divide, having it equal to VDC, you'll make a couple of these terms become unity, which makes things a little bit simpler as I'm writing it. But again, anything would work there, but whatever I select, I base has to be equal to V base over R naught, which in this case, VDC over R naught. And those will be my two normalization parameters. So I'm going to go ahead and start writing. My two equations become M sub C. And I'll write it as a function of theta is equal to, and V sub C divided by V base. And that looks like a divide through VDC becomes 1. We'll get plus V naught over VDC minus 1 cosine theta plus R naught times I naught minus IDC over VDC sine theta. And then for J sub L, this is I sub L over I base. That's going to look like here, things aren't going to immediately be as nice. R naught IDC over VDC plus R naught I naught minus IDC over VDC cosine theta plus R naught, and then we're going to divide by VDC over R naught, so the R naughts will cancel. We'll end up with VDC minus V naught over VDC times sine theta. Okay. Looking at it, we rewrite this term here, and I'll just distribute this division by VDC and say this is 1 minus V naught over VDC. Might make it a little bit more clear what we have going on. This coefficient and this coefficient are negatives of one another. And then this coefficient and this coefficient are the same thing. So let me simplify a little bit, just give those arbitrary names for the moment. I'll say A is equal to V naught over VDC minus 1. And B, this other coefficient, R naught, I naught minus IDC over VDC. Okay. And then I'll rewrite these two equations. What I end up with is something that's a little bit more simple. M sub C of theta is equal to 1 plus A cosine theta plus B sine theta. J sub L of theta is equal to this first thing, R naught IDC over VDC plus B cosine theta minus A sine theta. And some of you may be ahead of me on looking at this, but let's, as a thought experiment, try looking at the following equation. What I'm going to do is square both of these and sum them together. And I'm going to subtract off this term out front first. Okay, what's that going to do for me? So this is equal to, so I go through, so I get rid of this term out front and then just square the A and B sine and cosine terms. So I'll end up with, from M sub C of theta, A squared cosine squared theta plus B squared sine squared theta plus 2AB cos theta sine theta from squaring these second two terms. Then from J sub L, I'll have plus, again, A squared sine squared theta coming from here plus B squared cosine squared theta coming from here minus 2AB cos theta sine theta. Okay, plus 2AB cosine theta minus 2AB cosine theta. These two cancel out. Then if I collect my sine and cosine terms or factor out my coefficients, this is A squared, I have a cosine squared theta. Over here I have a sine squared theta plus B squared sine squared theta here, cosine squared theta here. And sine squared plus cosine squared, anything, is always equal to 1. So I get A squared plus B squared. Nope. Squared. Okay. Interesting. A are these two terms. So what does that mean? Let's rewrite this all on the next slide. So what I end up with is my M sub C of theta minus 1 squared plus my J of sub L of theta minus this R naught IDC over VDC squared. Oops. What we actually solved here, minus, what did I have? R naught IDC over VDC. Is equal to, it's just A squared plus B squared. A was V naught over VDC minus 1. B as R naught times I naught minus IDC over VDC squared. So what is this? Our signals, subtracting some constant from each of them, squaring them and summing them up, is equal to some constant thing. So over here on the right is all constant. This looks like x squared plus y squared is equal to something. That is, of course, the equation for a circle. So we have general form, x squared plus y squared is equal to r squared for a circle. It's a circle centered at the origin with radius r. This is giving us the equation for a circle shifted slightly away from the origin and with the radius according to this thing over here on the right. Let me move this because I'm going to simplify. This thing over here on the right, I'm going to just write in a slightly different form from where it came from. Okay, this V naught minus VDC, let's just call that M naught. Okay, what it was is our initial condition voltage V naught normalized by V base, which is VDC. So I'll just call that capital M naught, or the normalized initial condition V naught. And then this minus one came from a VDC over V base. And since V base is VDC, it gave us 1. So what that was MDC, or our normalized DC voltage source. And then a similar thing over here, perhaps a bit easier to see. VDC over R naught is our V base, or our I base, excuse me. So this is I naught minus IDC over I base. So we'll call that J naught minus JDC squared. It's our normalized initial condition on the current and our normalized current source current. Okay, so this is equal to R squared, the radius of our circle. And that itself is looking like a kind of Pythagorean theorem. Right, I'm saying r squared is equal to this squared plus this squared, and each of these are a distance between two points. So we can start sketching out what is the circle that this is telling us we have in the m sub j, m to j plane. So say m sub c here, j sub l on the vertical axis. And this equation is telling us that we've got a circle that's centered on m sub c is equal to 1. Put 1 here. And that 1 is from our MDC, same as this term. J centered on R naught IDC over VDC. That is J naught, just R, or excuse me, JDC, our normalized DC current source, and our normalized DC voltage source's value. That is the center of my circuit, or the center of my circle, excuse me. And then we have these two other points, my initial condition M naught and J naught, which is the normalized, whatever the initial condition of the circuit was. I'm just going to draw those arbitrarily right here. Say that this is our V naught over VDC, which is M naught. And this point here is our I naught over I base, which was VDC over R naught. That's J naught. So this point here, MDC, JDC is our DC solution to the circuit, came from our two sources, VDC and IDC, here and here. That ends up being the center of the circle, is in this case the two sources. In general, it's the DC solution to the circuit. So at DC, when is this resonant circuit steadied out and constant? It's somehow damped. When is the resonance amplitude equal to zero? Well, if all of this current flows through the inductor and the voltage here and here are the same, then there's no voltage on the inductor and there's no current in the capacitor and everything's in steady state. Right. So the DC solution of the circuit is the inductor conducts all of IDC and the capacitor blocks all of VDC. Then this thing will just sit there, constant FDC. The other point here, M naught, J naught, is just our initial condition. It's the initial voltage and initial current. We've normalized them into M and J, but it's just whatever the circuit started at the beginning at T is equal to zero. Then this equation tells us that we have a circle with radius that has this kind of Pythagorean theorem relationship, where one leg of the triangle is M naught minus MDC, one is J naught minus JDC. So M naught minus MDC is this distance, J naught minus JDC is this distance. So this is my radius. Pythagorean theorem, this squared plus this squared is equal to this squared. Equation for a circle, this thing is R squared, whatever's on the right-hand side of this equation. So this is all defining a circle with this radius centered around our DC solution. Something like this, but drawn better. Okay. And this is the beauty of state plane analysis. Okay. We kind of went through this as a derivation, but without doing any of the math up here at the top or on these previous two slides, I can jump directly to this point where I know what the waveforms, the normalized waveforms of the circuit look like on this state plane by recognizing, okay, the center is the DC solution. The initial point is the normalized initial condition. And the trajectory of this resonance will just be a circle centered on the DC solution with this constant radius for an undamped LC resonant circuit. Okay. There is a direction associated with this circle, and to figure out which direction it's going, we need to look at the initial derivatives on both of the states. So if the capacitor voltage is initially rising, then we would go this way. If the capacitor voltage is initially falling, then we would go this way, but there is always a direction. Assume the capacitor voltage is initially rising associated with the state plane. A state plane now, I'm saying this is state plane analysis. State plane is this plane that we're sketching right now. Okay, It is the two states, the capacitor voltage and inductor current, normalized and plotted with respect to one another. This M sub C JL plane is the state plane that we're talking about. Okay. And the beauty of the state plane is that, one, kind of knowing how it works, we can jump directly to this point without having to go through all the equations. And then two, we can begin to solve characteristics of the circuit waveforms just by looking at this circle and applying some trig in geometry to it. Okay. So it transforms problems that require differential equations into just geometry and trig. Knowing basically circles and triangles. So we can skip this whole differential equation business. Caveat, this is for one inductor, one capacitor circuits. Or circuits that can be reduced to an equivalent that have one inductor and one capacitor. We can't reasonably make that assumption that anything else is either effectively in parallel or series or is sufficiently large that we can approximate it as a constant voltage or current. Then the beauty of this falls apart. We can still go and plot things on the state plane, but it won't be circles anymore. We can't kind of very simply solve characteristics of it. So let's look at an example real quick. Let's say I reduced down to the same equivalent circuit and wanted to just jump through without doing all this derivation. How would I do it? So I would again begin by picking a V base. VDC is a good choice, but anything works. I base is then constrained. It is VDC over R naught. My DC solution to this circuit, I know just by inspection, looking at how the elements are connected, can do this entirely on intuition. Okay, what is the DC solution here going to be? Okay, I need to have no current in the capacitor and no voltage on the inductor. The only way to do that, have VDC here and IDC in the inductor. So my DC solution is V sub C is equal to VDC and I sub L is equal to IDC. I'll normalize those two things and say DC solution occurs when M sub C is equal to MDC is equal to 1. J sub L is equal to JDC, which is IDC over VDC times R naught. And then I need to have some initial conditions in the context of a power converter. These would come from solving the other intervals, putting all of this together during the dead time when this capacitance shows up and we begin a resonance, whatever the voltage was and current were before the beginning of the dead time. But again, as we had, we'll call this V sub C of time t is equal to 0, equal to V naught. We'll normalize that to say M sub C is equal to M naught is equal to V naught over VDC. J sub L at time 0, I sub L, equal to I naught, which means J sub L is equal to J naught is equal to I naught over VDC times R naught. And let me, just for generality, I'm going to get rid of these VDCs and just call it V base. Because of my selection, those are the same thing, but kind of more formulaic, should be V base. Okay. And then I can jump straight to drawing this state plane that we talked about. I think, do I have circle drawn on here? No. So I would draw this state plane by saying, again, the center is at this DC solution, MDC, JDC. The initial point, J naught, M naught. Then I have some constant radius between them and my state plane trajectory. We'll move in a circle, maintaining this constant radius. Okay.
Point here is, okay, I didn't need to do any of this differential equation or algebraic manipulation. I can jump exactly to this point, just looking at the circuit, jump straight here. Okay. I need to define a direction. Direction will come from, okay, find dvzt, dvc dt at time t is equal to zero, and really, or dil dt at t is equal to zero. So from my initial point, I really only need to know one of them. If I know M sub C is increasing, I'm going this way. If I know J sub L is increasing, I'm going that way. Only need to know one of them. Can be helpful to look at both of them just to make sure you haven't made any mistakes. If I find at times T is equal to zero, B sub C is increasing, and I sub L is increasing, there's some inconsistency here because I'm either going this way or this way, which is this way. M sub C increasing, J sub L decreasing. If I go counterclockwise, it's the opposite. So can be helpful to find both, but as long as you've made no errors, finding one is sufficient. And then, so now kind of nice, we can just jump directly to this point and sketch the state plane without having to do all this math. I can see perhaps the true beauty until next class, where we do some examples of solving characteristics off of this. But I promise you it's useful. The nice thing is if I want to solve things like what is the peak current or how long does it take before the circuit reaches zero voltage? What is the total dead time required? I can do that all entirely with just geometry and trig without having to go back to differential equations. So we'll do some examples of analysis on the state plane, continue talking about this analysis framework next class. Have a good weekend. Feel free to ask me any questions over Slack. Get going on the homework soon. We'll see you on Monday.